Welcome to Soul Sessions with Creative Mind with Deborah Burnt Maldonado and Dr. Rob Maldonado of Creative Mind. Join us each week for an inspiring conversation about personal development based on Jungian philosophy, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience. Spend each week with us to explore deep topics in a practical way. Let's begin. Hello, welcome to another episode of Soul Sessions with Creative Mind. This is a new series we're doing on neuroscience, and we're going to be covering all parts of life, your brain on success, your brain on love, your brain on your body and health, and your brain on God. So it's going to be a juicy series. We hope you enjoyed our Buddhism series the last 4 weeks. If you haven't listened to them yet, be sure to go back. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode.
And leave us some feedback.
Yeah, leave us some feedback. We love thumbs up and reviews. Yeah. That helps us as well. And join us in our Facebook group, Jungian Life Coaching with Creative Mind, if you want to experience some of our other bonus videos that we have. And say hello to us and our coaching team. So today, let's...
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you for the feedback on the Buddhist series. Mm-hmm. We really enjoyed the questions, the comments. We appreciate it. Mm.
So let's talk about our approach to the brain and neuroscience, just to lay out the playing fields for us. And then we're going to talk about how we define success.
Yeah, well, we can think of it this way. There are bodies of literature, of data, of information that inform our work. Mm-hmm. So there's three major sources for that inform our work. One of them is current neuroscience. Mm-hmm. We like to stay up to speed on what we're finding out about the brain, all this beautiful neuroimaging of the brain, mm-hmm. and the nervous system, and we're finding out tons and tons of information. A lot of it hasn't even been processed yet because there's so much and it's coming so quickly. But neuroscience, definitely. The other one, of course, is Jungian psychology. Jungian theory gives us a good base for how do we process that information? What do we do with it? What does it mean for our personal experience instead of just this kind of scientific geeking out of...
Just looking at our brain waves and saying, well, that's cool. I'm in alpha alpha right now. What does that mean?
Yes. And then finally, the wisdom traditions that come from the Upanishads. And most of them, we love all of them because they all have their unique perspective, but they all go back to that wisdom that comes from the Upanishads. Mm-hmm.
So this episode, we're talking about success. And a lot of people, when they hear neuroscience, they think, I'm going to rewire my brain for success. Mm-hmm. And that means just thinking positive or programming myself. And when I was a hypnotherapist, I did a lot of that. I'm good enough, and I'm success is coming, and I'm a money magnet. And we're going to talk about it in a different way. We're going to talk about it in a slightly different way. But first, how do we define success? Is it a mansion in the hills of California? Is it making a certain amount of money? Is it getting fame and accolades and rewards? What is success?
Yeah. It's when your parents give you the thumbs up. No.
When everyone else thinks you're great. When the world agrees that you've made it. And no, we're kidding, obviously. What is, for me, success, I used to think success was about a certain number. Mm-hmm. That if I reached a certain level of income.
The million.
Well, first it was six figures, you know, just like I can like sustain myself running my own business and having income. And then it was like, ooh, everyone in the coaching industry is like, become seven-figure coach, get to seven figures. Mm-hmm. And I was like obsessed with, that's what defines success. And then when we get to seven figures, you're like, still not it. And so you're kind of chasing this illusion of what success is based on what other people tell you it is. And when you get there, you realize that's not what it is. Jim Carrey famously said, I wish everyone had all the money in the world, all the fame in the world, and they realize that that's not what life is about. That's not what's going to give you happiness. So how would you define success, Rob?
Yeah, well, first, I think every generation has to redefine success for themselves. Mm-hmm. If you notice, there's this tendency to rebel against the parents, against what they want you to be. And it's a healthy rebellion. In other words, you should rebel. Mm-hmm. You should not accept what your parents want you to do and find your own path. Mm. But this current generation, I don't think has defined success for themselves yet, because there's so much confusion, so much noise, so many different ideas of what success is. And so a lot of it kind of is dictated to people from the media, from social media, from observing what others are doing, and it's kind of falling back on this materialistic perspective that it's about getting money, it's about getting fame, success.
Well, I think back in the like 80s and 90s, well, in the 90s, especially, people were buying, I've lived in Colorado, and everything was about big, getting that bigger, bigger house. I have, you know, 5,000 square feet, I have 10,000 square feet, I have a yard, I have the view, I have, you know, the car, and all that, that kind of outer, like, my neighbor got this, I have to get the same thing. And keeping up with the Joneses, they had a movie about that. It's like this hunger for defining ourselves as successful based on external things.
Absolutely. And so I would say that for us, success is certainly being able to have those things if you need them, if you want them, if they're part of your purpose. But having the purpose is the primary element. Mm. Knowing what your purpose is, and then having the money, the success, the ability to communicate, whatever skills and talents you have, serving that purpose. The money, including the fame, that they the serve fans. That higher purpose. Yeah. That gives you real success, real satisfaction in life.
And for me, I always define success as that I'm actively pursuing something bigger than I did before. Like, you're successful just by being in the game, you know, going for something, because most people don't even try. They don't try to change their life. So those of you who feel that they're waiting for that, like, that success to happen, if you're actually actively doing something, getting trained in like coaching or getting a degree in something, or putting yourself out there, starting a business, having this small idea that maybe you're doing on the weekends while you're working your corporate job, you're already successful because you're stepping out beyond the herd and you're doing something that fills your soul. And I think just the act of that is success. But let's talk about the brain a little bit and what happens when, you know, how do we get to that place where what brings a person to the state where they're willing to step out and when they're willing or they have the confidence to move forward?
Yeah, the brain is, it's really a remarkable organ. As far as we know, it's the most complex organism or organ in the universe. There's nothing that compact, which is like a 3-pound object that contains so much power. The human brain, excuse me, we're only starting to find out its true power, and it's remarkable. It creates for us what we call our reality. It creates for us what we know as our technology. All these computers, all this internet, all the cell phone communication apparatuses, they come from the brain. Mm. And a lot of people think, oh, the brain must be like a computer. No, it's the other way around. Computers reflect the way our brain works, and only a small part of how our brain works. Mm. It's a process, information processing unit that works at remarkable speeds.
And so it's, would you say it's a tool that the mind uses versus the brain creating the mind?
Yeah, that's definitely our perspective from Eastern philosophy, that the brain, because it's part of the body, and the human body arises from a fundamental consciousness. Mm. And so it's a different perspective than, let's say, the typical neuroscientific perspective that sees consciousness or awareness arising from the brain. Mm. So anyway, we know there's a strong genetic component to the structure and function of the brain. In other words, if I want to know how smart you are and what you're going to do with your life, and I don't have any access to you, all I have to do is look at your parents. Because you are the combination of half of your father and half of your mother's genes. And the combination created you. And that genetic code that we inherit from our parents creates the structural brain and the body. And we know IQ is inherited. It's a big part of our inheritance that we get our smarts from our parents. Right?
I mean, my parents weren't educated, but they were really, really, really smart. And so I could see that. And then they're my grandparents, too. Very smart. But
yeah, of course, it goes back the lineage, right? Your parents' parents and all that. But just
normally, smart people marry smart people too.
Typically, yes.
So you get that kind of unless you're like a geek and you're marrying a supermodel or something.
Right,
that's a whole smart too.
That's a whole other podcast because we tend to look for people that look like us and that are kind of on the same intellectual level as we are, of course, and then socioeconomic status. And
yeah, all that stuff. That's also so we kind of are kind of born into something that's fixed in a way, like a conditioned in a way in us.
Very much so,
like pre-packed, like out of the box. we got some factory settings with us ourselves.
Yeah, and so when we think about success, we can certainly think in terms of how did this individual come to be successful? One of the big components, of course, is genetics. Mm-hmm. They got good genes, right? They got the success genes in a sense. But what we know about the brain from the accumulation of neuroscientific information is that it's a brain-environment interaction that we're talking about. In other words, the brain does not just create itself from the genetic code. It needs an environment on which to flourish.
So it's a collaboration between the external and internal, and it's that the brain feeds off the external?
Very much so. We evolved in this world of nature. That's why we love nature. That's why it's beautiful to us. It feels good to us. It's restorative because that was our mother in a sense. We evolved this brain in nature.
That's interesting because if people ought to say they get restored when they're in nature, I was just telling you, we just moved to the East Coast where there's a lot more trees than in California, like nice, a lot of green. And I said, it's just like the trees, I feel like they're hugging me. And it's that mother archetype that we're experiencing through that dynamic. It's very nurturing and calming.
Yeah, so if you think of, let's say you have two good parents with good genes, they pass on these genes to the child. Now the environment has to be there to support the development of that brain and the potential of the brain. So the in neuroscience, they talk about enriching or enriched environments. What does that mean for a human being? It means an environment where you hear a lot of words as you're developing.
And reading, too. They say when you read to kids, their vocabulary increases.
Yes, the parents or other people are reading stories to them. Of course, the child is observing people reading books, which is itself a great lesson. Whereas impoverished environments, meaning children that grew up in poverty or in neglect, they don't see that. They don't have those examples, and they don't have those environments that support their development. And so even if they have great intelligence and potential, the environment is not there to kick in those skills and intelligences.
So there's like the intellectual skills in the environment what about the social skills? I mean, I know when we would have dinner at the house, the family dinner, we all had to sit down and we had the TV off. We had to have a conversation. So there was this kind of, and now I think families, you see them go out to dinner and all the kids are on their little iPads and playing their little video games, and no one's really talking. And and so it's that social intelligence as well happens with that enriched environment, to have conversation, to be able to talk to people. And that would, I would say, would think would be contributing to someone's ability to succeed or to be in, because success isn't done in a bubble either. You have to basically work with people. Money comes through people. So you have to be around people and well, I guess not every, if you're a lab technician, maybe not, but eventually you have to work your way through the social structure of
society. Yeah, of course, you're talking about emotional intelligence and social intelligence, and that's definitely a big part of success.
Would that be an enriched environment as well? Like the enrichment of the child is to talk to the child, engage with the child.
Yeah, and one of the areas that hasn't really been developed that much is humor. I mean, the way I would gauge somebody's intelligence just by interacting with them is, do they have that sense of humor?
Is that why you thought I was really smart when
exactly.
we met?
Exactly. Anybody that knows how to laugh is intelligent, right?
Oh,
they have that sense of irony, of different
sarcasm,
perspectives, sarcasm, all that beautiful.
Self-deprecating
very subtle,
humor.
Yeah.
Being willing to like make fun of themselves.
Exactly.
And laugh about it.
Yes, but social intelligence is a big component of success. Now, the question of technology hasn't really been studied in depth. Most parents just assume that giving their kid technology is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the research hasn't really been done. Mm. We don't really know what it's doing to the brain. I mean, there's a little bit of kind of speculation as to what's going on when kids are looking at screens for long periods of time as they're developing, mm-hmm. right? I saw a baby the other day, still not talking in diapers, looking at an iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. And ignoring their social environment, like you said.
And that's really because there's something, I mean, there's something, like I said, the emotional, logical, building rationale. Mm. But success is really also being in touch with our own emotions and being able to relate to others and provide. I mean, I always think of success being that you're putting something out in the world that people need. And if you don't know what, you don't have that social intelligence, you're not going to know. Like, you can't put yourself in other people's shoes because you're so kind of isolated in your own world, and there's an empathy and emotion that compassion that gets developed through social interaction and ability to get along with others, to lead others, all those things. See some people like that woman, that the girl that is on trial right now, Theranos. Mm-hmm. That woman, she had the look, and everyone invested in her because of her look, but she had no, like, people said she was very cold and odd, and she just didn't have that social intelligence. And so I don't know.
Yeah, with her, I think she had good intentions, but again, the environment has the potential to be corruptive as well.
Mm-hmm.
It can corrupt that intention and lead it into different ways.
Yeah.
So, but back to early development, because this is important for, especially for parents to understand, the first 6 years we know are really crucial. Mm. If you can give your kid an enriched environment during that early period, you're giving them a big head start towards success, both in academic and social business success. Mm. There is this factor called neuroplasticity that's very active during those early years. Mm-hmm. So we're like sponges, right? We all know kids are like sponges. We're absorbing everything that's going on in the environment, learning and hardwiring it into our system, because let's say that's going to help us survive in the world. Mm-hmm. The more we learn from those experiences, the better we're off.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if we don't get that stimulation early on, then that deficit is harder to overcome later on.
Because your brain is so it's so open to rewiring itself at that time.
You see it in language
clearly. And then it starts pruning after six.
There's different periods of pruning, and some of them early on. But as far as the neuroplastic element, it seems to slow down after age 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there.
So as an adult, is it hard to like rewire yourself?
Well, yeah, you can look at language, right? If we try to learn a different language, now we can do it, meaning our mind is still plastic, our brain is still plastic, but it's going to cost us a little bit more effort.
Whereas a child,
if you expose them to the language, they'll pick it up like that because their neuroplasticity is still very open.
It's almost like their mindset is more open, and then as after 6, it becomes more fixed, where the ability to learn new things gets harder to do.
Yeah.
So like someone who goes back to school, you know, maybe you're a teenager and you don't go to college and you end up going back at 40, and it's just harder to learn because you're not in that mode. It's just a little harder to get back in the groove.
Yeah. One of the big factors that they've found in success is this ability to postpone pleasure.
Mm.
Some of you might have seen the marshmallow experiment.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So they tell the kid, they put him in a room and they tell the kid, here's a marshmallow. You can either eat it now or wait until I come back and then I'll give you 2 marshmallows.
And how long were they gone for?
Just 5 minutes or something. So the kids that, the 2 camps, right? Human beings are always in
these. As soon as they leave, I'm going to grab that marshmallow.
The kids that could not resist and just gobbled it up, and the kids that were able to wait to get the bigger reward.
Mm.
They followed them into adulthood.
And guess what happened?
Guess what happened, exactly. The kids that did not have that impulse control of, let's wait, you know, I can wait until they come back and get a bigger reward. They ended up doing poorly in school, in success, in jobs, in money, all of that.
Are you looking for a satisfying career as a life coach? If you are seeking a deeper path of training and growth, Creative Mind University offers an ICF-accredited Jungian life coach training program that goes beyond surface positive thinking and into a powerful process of real transformation. You can start your new career as a certified life coach trained in a unique methodology based on Jungian theory, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience. Get the tools to become your true self, change your life, and the lives of others. Visit creativemindcoach.com, click on apply, and speak with one of our team members today to discuss your future and possibilities of becoming a certified Jungian life coach. That's creativemindcoach.com. So I see this too with people that want to, as entrepreneurs or people that want to change their business, or like we train a lot of coaches to, you know, leave their corporate world, become a coach and start their business. And I find that there's some people that are more like, they need that instant gratification. They put their toe in and it doesn't work. And then they want to back out right away. And then there's other people that are like, I don't care. I'm going to do it. And it's more, I always say that one of the biggest, of course, postponing pleasure, because you know that if I put the effort in now, it's going to pay off later. Just that intelligence to do that. But I also think resilience is important too, because if we don't have the ability to be like pick ourselves up after a mistake or deal with that kind of navigate through conflicts, because when you start something new, there's tons of conflicts and resistance that shows up externally that's reflecting our internal resistance. It's that intelligence, that ability to say and figure things out, you know, and say, you know what, I'm resilient, I'm going to figure this out. That's what makes someone more successful, because they're not just, okay, I want the 1-2-3 plan and instant, you know, instant success without a lot of effort, which is a lot of business coaching out there.
It's
like
the marketing
all about
strategy.
Just do this one course and I made $1 million, and everyone just like wants that instant gratification. And then they realize, you know what, I have to, you know, roll up my sleeves. I'm going to have some challenges. But it's worth it, though. I find that things that come easy to me are not as fulfilling as if something that you had to work through and kind of postpone it, and then it's so great. Like meeting you at 41, if I would have met you at 23, I might not have been so, like, well, I probably would be so, I'm happy, but but you know what I'm saying?
You're painting yourself into a corner now.
No, it's just that kind of postponing that, you know, really waiting for what I really wanted versus just getting the next guy that comes along that wants to marry me. It was worth the wait and worth the transformation that I needed to get there. And I think that's really important as well. And
so that has to do with this ability to postpone pleasure. It has to do with the prefrontal cortex. So it's the front part of the brain. Mm-hmm. It accounts in humans for about a third of the brain itself. So it's a really big part compared to chimps and other animals. What that does, it's like the executive in the brain. It's the one that controls the
conductor.
Yeah, the conductor, the central control center of it all. It says, look, you have this reward in front of you, but if you hold off, if you wait, you'll get a bigger reward, and it's able to manage that.
It's like impulse control?
Impulse control, yeah. That's a simple way of putting it. People that have poor impulse control.
Why are you looking at
me? Even though they might be very intelligent, might have a lot of skills, a lot of talents, they don't have the impulse control, therefore they kind of sabotage their success.
So they react really quickly. They let their emotions drive, the fears drive them. And they don't have that logic, like the balance of the passion to do what they do, but you also need that intelligence and that logic to drive, like kind of plan and strategize, but you also need the passion. And so I see a lot of people that are very impulsive, and it's like they're driven by their emotions. And myself too, that you get into those states where you let your emotions just take over, and it's like you become brain dumb, like you're not even seeing things straight. Your mind gets confused. And so it's the ability to have that prefrontal cortex focusing.
And in some meditation studies, they've found that the prefrontal cortex is actually strengthened by certain types of meditation.
And I have a really good one. And so would you say that ADD and kind of the inability to focus kind of plays into that?
Absolutely.
People looking for the next thing and never satisfied, and then, or starting like digging shallow holes, but never really going anywhere. They're kind of, we see a lot of people like, I'm going to start this business. No, that's not the first thing that shows up. I'm going to start this. I'm going to change my mind. So here's a really good exercise. Think about your third eye, and that's where the frontal cortex is. If you just imagine like a spinning circle in your front, your third eye, that right in your forehead, and you could just focus on that, just like bring all your attention into that area and just hold it, even for 5 minutes, just practice pulling that attention there. The energy goes where the attention goes. So you're kind of focusing, and the blood flow moving through that. When I did hypnotherapy, we did that meditation for that to improve focus. And so a little tip there.
Yeah, so the brain, and thank goodness it's plastic, you know, for us to begin to work with it in a creative and directive way at any point in our life. So in other words, it's never too late. Whatever your past experience has been, if you learn this information now and you start to apply it, it will help you. Mm. It will help you, and you can actively change the structure of your brain through meditation, through focusing, through just the knowledge itself helps us understand, what am I doing here? Mm. You know, am I
really... And understanding your emotions.
Yes, and controlling my impulses and understanding motivation and all that. But so we can think of, let's say, the genetics and the brain structure, the neuroanatomy of it as the hardware. Mm. Right, like a computer. If you look at the process, the main processing unit, it's a box, and it's got wires and lights and all this stuff. It's,
remember when the computers were like gigantic? Yeah. You'd have like a big box under your desk.
There used to be a whole room, I think, for a basic computer. Now they're tiny. So anyway, that's the hardware. That's our brain. Or some in neuroscience they call it the wetware. Yeah, mm. the 3-pound brain in our skull. But the software is what we call the mind. Mm. And the programs that we run in our mind is the stuff that we learn, the ideas that compel us, the ideas that inform our own brain about what is it that I'm experiencing, what is the nature of reality, and then what is the nature of its own self. So the mind has this ability to self-reflect, which is very powerful. So one of the psychologists that worked, he came like right after Skinner, and the behaviors were very powerful in American psychology for a long time in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And then Albert Bandura came along, and he brought along this self-efficacy theory. He was a social psychologist, and he emphasized that, okay, behaviorism and neuroscience, or the kind of the perspective that the brain is doing a lot of this stuff, is important. But he said, let's look at the social context. Mm-hmm. Again, because it's a brain environment interaction.
Mm-hmm. Like I was talking really about earlier. Yeah.
It's not just that you inherit the intelligence and the ability to succeed, but that the supporting mechanisms of society have to be there.
And don't you think in epigenetics too, like we inherit that, like kind of our family's environment, their brain's interaction with
their environment. Experiences. Yeah, absolutely. That's another big component. Maybe we'll do another podcast.
A lot of stuff to cover here.
But just in brief, this self-efficacy theory is really important for understanding success in individuals because it has this locus of control idea. So the locus of control simply means, where do you as an individual see the control of your life? Is it outside, external to you, or is it in you, internal locus of control? We know that individuals that think external powers have control over my life and there's nothing I can do about it do not succeed as much as individuals that have that internal locus of control, meaning I am the one that decides my destiny, my level of income, the job I do, the way I live my life, etc., etc. So it's a really important key for success. If you want to be successful, you have to know this knowledge and be able to develop it consciously. So that's the good news, that if you don't have it, if you've been externalizing and thinking there's these powers outside of me that I have no control over, you can start to draw it back to internalize it and understand that you have the power to change your life, to make decisions.
Mm-hmm. And I find that anytime, you can just check with yourself that anytime you're anxious about something, anytime you're worried about something coming in or what people are thinking or money, where is that money coming from? What we're doing is we're putting the locus of control somewhere out there, that there's something outside of me that's going to control my destiny. And I'm here, like we were conditioned in the beginning, interacting with the environment, and then the environment has power. And it does to basically create our conditioning. But then when we get older, we need to kind of create our own way. So the beginning, like Jung said, the beginning part of life is to build up this conditioning to survive. But then if we want to be successful, we want to like leave the herd, leave the conditioning of our family and the, you know, the psycho socioeconomic structure that our family lived in. And we want to go to another place. We want to do something different. We don't want to follow that lineage of career and society. We want to be entrepreneurs. A lot of our people that do individuation want to become entrepreneurs because it's such a perfect fit for it. We have to have that control within ourselves. We have to be the force in our life. You know, we talked about this also last week in Buddhism. We talked about the idea of, you know, how to create an enlightened society and people out in the world trying to fix the world. Like the world is bad. It's gone to crap and we got to fix it and we got to heal the world. But we don't really think that we have the power within ourselves to start within. to change the world. And so with success, if, like, again, if some obstacle comes up, are you going to give up and say, see, I have bad luck, or the economy is going to stop me, or there's not enough people that want my service or my products that I'm trying to sell, my boss isn't going to give me a raise, all that kind of powerlessness that we're waiting for the world to give us the success or to give us permission. Mm-hmm. But we have that kind of fundamental inside that really deep, profound knowing that we can direct it. We can direct it. And that's what brings success. And it's kind of like when I left the corporate world, I said to my friends were like, oh, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to be a hypnotherapist. I don't know if I can do this. I never ran my own business. I said, but, you know, I'm tired of just waiting for my life to change. I want to see what I'm made of. That's what I said. And I just did it to just see what resources I have within myself to change. And that idea has given me everything I needed. Just that seed of, I'm going to see what I'm made of. I'm not going to see if the world will accept me or if I can, you know, if the economy is going to participate. I'm going to see what I'm made of. And that really is that what you're talking about, that locus of control.
Yeah. I learned the hard way. I would listen to people and take their advice, and I got burned a few times early on. Their advice was, you know, don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. You know, stick to what's true or has been proven by others to work. Mm-hmm. You know, just follow the rules, in other words, follow the herd. And that didn't work for me. It wasn't until I stopped listening to people and started trusting in my own internal locus of control that my ideas are good enough, and that's what you should be doing, the things that you love and you know are going to make you happy, right? They're going to express the way you want to work.
One of the things that I, for me, my experience of that was when I was starting to look for an agent for my book, and I was wanting to write a book, and all my friends, I was in networking groups, and a lot of them were therapists, and they had master's degrees and PhDs, and they were, you don't have a degree in psychology, and everyone that I heard at the writing conferences was, you have to have the credentials, and they're not going to buy, you know, no big publisher is going to buy your book. You're crazy. And I kept thinking, this is something that needs to be out there. I want to share this idea of the subconscious and how the mind works and how we create our reality. And I've never read a book like this before, and I need to write it. And I did what you did. I didn't listen to them. I ignored. I said, I'm going to make this work. And I got a deal, not only get an advance for the publishing, which they said, you're never going to get an advance. You should self-publish because no one's going to like it. But I got published a deal with Wiley, which is one of the top nonfiction books in the publishing companies in the world, and distributed internationally. And then everyone after my book came out, all these people that had books published, they said, how did you do it? Like, you don't have a degree. Like, you weren't famous. You weren't on the Today Show. You know, you didn't have all these things to you know, that normal people would get to get this publishing. And I said, I just use the power of my mind. I use my own kind of willingness and not knowing what was going to stop me. It took a while. I got lots of rejections, but it's that resilience. It's that I know this book needs to be out there. I know it needs to be out there, and kept going and going and going. And I didn't listen to people. And you also said that to me too. Like, when that was happening, you were like, don't listen to people.
Yeah. And I would say, just to be clear,
we don't want to not listen to anyone.
Yeah, but not to listen to
the naysayers.
The kind of the ordinary people, or the people that are, their mindset is on limitation.
You know what I call those people? Dream stealers. There's dream stealers out there that aren't, and you look at the source of the people that are saying those things, they're not really doing anything. The people that are saying you can't do that, or you should be careful, they've never done anything like that before. So of course they're going to give you the advice from your old self versus who you're becoming.
Yeah. So we do want to listen to some people.
people that have done what you want to do and, yes. and can inspire someone who's inspiring and saying moving you forward. Yes.
Yes. So social learning theory also says that these mastery experiences is what builds our confidence. Mm. The confidence to succeed comes from trying and doing things that you're not sure you can do. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you're only doing what you know is going to work for you, you're pretty much staying in the same place. You're just spinning your wheels, right? I know I can do this and I know it works because I've done it before. Same
it's
place.
Like lazy. It's same like a place. Lazy way to live.
And there's nothing wrong with it. Some yeah. people need to do that perhaps, but again, if you want to experience success and you want to express your full potential, you're going to have to work with your mind a little bit. And one of them is to create these mastery experiences for yourself. You're going to have to try to do things you're not sure you can do. Mm. And some people even do things that nobody has ever done before. Mm-hmm. Those are the real pioneers. Those are the mm-hmm. people that create new ways of doing business, new technology, new science.
Well, remember we went to the Wright Brothers Museum when mm-hmm. we were there? And remember all the letters they wrote to people asking for money? And they had 400 flights before they finally got that plane off the ground. And because of them, we can go to the in space. And I mean, they kind of, what they discovered was so profound. And everyone was yeah. like, they're crazy. These crazy guys, their bicycle shop, are trying to, you know, make things fly. And only bird, you know, that's unnatural. And yeah. and so it's really breaking the boundaries of where other people have gone before.
And we know successful people have mentors, of course.
Yes.
So you need that social modeling. Mm. In other words, you learn from others. Yes. Newton himself said, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. In other words, the people that came before us, that opened up the possibilities for us. They mm-hmm. did the hard work. They did the research. They wrote the books. They tried experiments. They're the ones that we're now reaping the rewards from, and we're able to carry on that work.
So when you see someone who's successful, they kind of wake up that success within you, that if they can do it, I can do it.
Absolutely.
But what normally we do is like, oh, I'm not like them, you know? So you have to kind of identify with a mentor that you say, well, I want what she has. I want what he has. And show me the way. Like, show me. And it's really not about learning skills as much, but about how to work with your mind to be that resilience, to have that locus of control. Because, you know, definitely intelligence helps because you're able to figure out problems, but it's something that you can't see on the outside. When you look at someone successful, you think, oh, they're successful because they took these steps. Mm-hmm. But what's really making them a success is what's going on inside of them. What's the inner world that they created, the mind of success.
Yeah. So mentors, coaches, just people you admire that have come before you and left books or information, you can learn from these great people.
Masterminds, people that are all, kind of growing, doing the same, on the same goal, learning from each other, lifting each other up. It's really a wonderful.
Yeah, that's
feed off each other's.
That's another element of it, because mentors, let's say, are individuals.
Yes.
But then you have social support networks like mastermind groups, mm-hmm. Communities of like-minded people that are really enriching for success. Mm-hmm. And if you surround yourself with people that are actively doing the things that you want to attain mm-hmm. and to be doing, you're much more likely to succeed than if you hang out with your buddies from
the bar. bowling team, nothing wrong with bowling. You know, when I first started, I left the corporate world. And usually, I was in the corporate world for almost 20 years. So I did, the corporate people, you know, they're different. They're, they have their, you know, they're everything's about family and vacations and not everyone. And I kind of was always the guru in the group that people came to for advice. And when I left and I started becoming, doing the hypnotherapy and then later coaching, I started hanging out with these networking groups, and it was like a different type of person. We had different conversations. They were talking about the different possibilities than I would have in the corporate world. So the corporate mindset is very different. Yeah. It's about, you know, climbing the ladder and maybe even competition, proving yourself and your worth and all that stuff. Where in the entrepreneurial state, it's a different kind of success. So there's nothing wrong with being in the corporate world, but that environment breeds a certain amount of mindset of worker. You know, you're relying on someone else to approve of you moving forward. We're an entrepreneur, your owner, you're in charge of your own success. And it's like a different type of conversation you're having with people. And I was like, ooh, I could talk about spiritual stuff with these people and the personal growth. And it was just so different. And so we want to be around those community of people that can talk our language and be where we're going, not where we were.
Yeah, so I guarantee you, if you look at any successful person and you study their past, there's mentors and there's community behind that success. No mm-hmm. No one creates success on their own, mm-hmm. right? That myth about the self-made person, mm-hmm. self-made billionaire, millionaire, that's a false assumption, basically.
It takes a tribe, it takes a village.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. It takes community, it takes mentors, coaches, a lot of support.
Well, right. When I think of masterminds, I think of, like, in Jungian psychology, in Eastern philosophy, everyone is you. So they're the shadow parts of us that we haven't, like our mentors, like our shadow of our future self, like in a way that the part of us that our potential, they're reflective of that potential and the wisdom that we already have within us. You're not getting it from them. It's actually a different, what you're really doing is you're awakening your own wisdom by being around mentors and also different parts, like someone who has a talent in a certain area or that area, they're all parts of you, and that tapping into that different aspects of yourself through in a community, you see yourself reflected in all those people. And it awakens the things in your unconscious that you weren't aware of, that you have, the skills maybe you didn't know you had.
Right. So we've gone through the biology, right? The brain, how it kind of sets us up for failure or success, depending on
I wouldn't call it failure, more like mediocrity. It can set us up for mediocrity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the default, right? Just kind of stay safe, stay protected, stay alive.
Yeah.
Go for those quick pleasures.
That's right. And then the social learning theory, which kind of tells us about what needs to be there in the environment to support that intelligence so that you're able to create success.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, we create success in a social setting.
Yeah.
Right? We have to be part of the community, part of the world.
Mm.
But then there's this third element, which we call purpose or higher purpose, which is more intangible. It's harder to kind of wrap our minds around, but definitely important, because what purpose does, it coordinates the biology, the social psychology of it, and makes it into something even bigger, something grander, something that transcends these ideas of success, because we know you can line up all these things and success is not guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it over and over. People have everything they need, and most people would say there's no reason for them to fail. They should be very successful, but they're not, because they lack purpose.
Mm.
Purpose is the transcendent element in all this.
So would you say that purpose, going back to the marshmallow, is that if you're that gives you the delay, the ability to delay, because you know there's a bigger purpose than just a quick satisfaction. You're not going for that lower, like a lower desire, which is I want to feel good right away. I want to make money right away. I want to do this to make money or to get security, versus I want to do this because there's something in my soul that needs to be expressed.
Right. So if we think of simply in terms of rewards and punishments, mm-hmm. right? Let's say reward is getting the money, getting the success, getting the fame, getting
where everyone going, you're so great, you're yes. so smart.
that's rewarding for yeah. most human beings, yeah. and it's very powerful. Money itself is a kind of a strong reinforcer. That itself is not success for us, because when you operate from at that level of just going for the money, for the fame, for the prestige, you're conditioned by those things. In other words, even if you get those things in abundance, they own you. They're not serving your higher purpose. They're not serving you. You're serving it, basically. You're indebted to those things, and it keeps you going and working continuously, of course, until they start to disappear, or you lose your health, or you get old and can't work anymore. Then you're in trouble then, because you're depending on this externalized success to make you happy.
Well, and also too, the idea of delay is that if you think your success is about, like I said, the six figures, seven figures, you know, that external reward, you're not going to enjoy doing what you love. It's going to be a job, another job to you. That's what I found, that when I would lose that sense of my purpose again, like you kind of get lost in it, because you get success and then you get a taste of it and then you want to get more. You enjoy the money that you never had before, and then you get lost in it. And then you, especially if you're surrounded by people that aren't aligned spiritually, they're just kind of that money-minded people that money is the goal. You start to feel like this job, like I gotta work really hard, and people get burnt out all the time. I know a lot of my friends that have been really successful, they're just burnt out. They're just like, oh, like I can't do this. It's like, oh, I'm working 7 days a week. And it's like, what are you working for? And they're not even in purpose. They start out, especially with coaches, I see a lot of them start out wanting to do like personal development and growth. And then they see all these business coaches making all this money, and they're like, ooh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a business coach now. And they let go of all that passion that really drove them to be successful. And then they're exhausted and they're not fulfilled, and they're making money, but there's an emptiness to it. And then they end up, I see this trajectory of them now going back to, okay, I want to teach spiritual work. I'm done with the business stuff. I want to teach more empowerment, and I want to go back to that. And so it's natural to get caught up in the shiny objects. And the purpose is really what gives us that fulfillment now in the moment without any external reward.
Yeah.
And then you don't feel like you're working. You feel like it's just what you do. A lot of people say to us, we're always busy. We have so much going on. We have a lot of different classes and courses and things we're doing live. And I never think of it as work. I think of it as we love what we do. So it's like we're in our purpose. And that's the difference. It's you can work, spend a lot of time doing your purpose. It could be feel like work, or it can feel exhilarating and empowering and
creative. If we go back to the marshmallow, then the ability to postpone that satisfaction, that instant gratification, right? If you're working for the money and the money is not there temporarily, most people will quit, right? Because they're depending on that reward to keep them going. Whereas when you're working from your higher purpose, it doesn't matter what's going on in the business. You're going to continue because that purpose is driving you, not the external reward system.
I hear a lot of people say, and I've said this myself, if I could just help one person, my work will, like, it'll be worth it. And I'll hear a lot of people say that I just could just help one person. And that's what we want to do. We want to help one person at a time. You know, every person you talk to, they're your focus. Every time someone interacts with you online and you're sharing your wisdom and they're responding to you, that's your purpose. It's not to sell them into something right away or that kind of grasping. It's like you're in your purpose. And we talk about this a lot too in consultations. A lot of people get nervous asking, you know, selling their services. It's because they're not just being... If you're in your purpose, it's easy. People can feel your passion for what you do. They can feel your love for what you do. and they want to be a part of it. And so it's really getting inside and connecting to what that is. And your purpose isn't a job. It's not a career.
Not at all. It is the reason that you do this. So, and again, looking at the, you know, the social learning model, it has to be internalized. In other words, it has to come from within you. Mm. That's your purpose. If you're depending on externalizing forces, then you're being manipulated, controlled, conditioned by external forces. You're more likely to quit.
You know, a lot of artists say they love doing their art until they start selling it. Yeah. And then they kind of lose that the love of it, because then it becomes a job.
Yeah.
And but it's okay to receive money. It's just that you don't want to then flip it and make the money the goal. You want to, every day is, I'm so lucky I get to do what I love. I mean, I wake up every day thinking, I'm so happy that I get to do what I love. Whatever shows up today, I'm doing what I love, and I can deal with everything else. Don't you feel that way too?
Absolutely. As long as the money serves your higher purpose, then it doesn't have that power over you.
Like the money becomes a servant to you. That's and right. It's like helping you live your purpose more, because if we both had jobs that we had to work at and only can do this, you know, a couple days a week, we wouldn't be able to help as many people. We wouldn't be able to we feel maybe exhausted after our job and drained, and then we wouldn't be what we are. So the abundance helps you do your best job, your best work as well. But you don't want to do it for the money. You want to do it for your purpose.
So, yeah. So this is the new model of success.
The Maldonado motto of success.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, you're happy doing your work, like you were saying. It doesn't feel like drudgery. It doesn't feel like something you have to force yourself to do. You're doing it out of love, out of service, out of your natural talents and skills.
And then also your abundance. It's nice to have abundance so you can help others. You can do good with the money. So it's not about not caring about the money, but you make it a part of the whole system versus just the top of the mountain. And then because you're going to have lean times and abundant times. And are you only going to be happy when there's abundant times? You want to be able to have your purpose as your rock to carry you through and not grab that marshmallow. Because I remember I would start with like, because it's like you feel that you have to have that instant gratification. And when you make it from that fear, decisions from that fear, you're not in line.
So I bet you as a kid you would have grabbed the marshmallow.
No, I was good. I was very patient.
You followed the rules.
I was a very harshly disciplined as a child. So I was very, I was good at holding back.
I was bad. I probably would have stolen the marshmallow bag and run off with it.
I know. Anytime I get like a little dessert or sweets, I go in and what happened there? It's gone already. So I wait and but that's okay. We'll buy more. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this segment on the brain on success and living your purpose. And next week, we're going to talk about everyone's favorite topic.
Your favorite topic,
definitely. My favorite. Well, your favorite topic, Rob. Love. We're talking about what happens in the brain with love and how we sync up with other people and what. You know, what's creating that
when you're under the influence of love.
When you're under the influence of infatuation and a little bit about the neuroscience of love with a twist. So hope you and come back next week. Don't forget to subscribe to Soul Sessions with Creative Mind on Spotify, iTunes, all the wonderful podcast services.
Yeah, leave us a review if you have time.
And we'll see you next week for another show.
Stay well.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Soul Sessions with Creative Mind. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any episode. And also join us on Facebook in our live interactive community, Jungian Life Coaching with Creative Mind University. Have a great and wonderful day, and we'll see you next week.